welcome into another episode of the Bandwagon Sports Podcast. I'm Brian Moldine.
I'm Lisa Braltz.
Oh, yeah, I'm John Steinbacher.
And I'm the intern, Roger Blanco.
We are back with you. Way to be ready, John.
Caught me off guard. Yeah.
You thought we wouldn't go in the same order we always do?
Right.
Fair enough. We've got a fun episode for you this week. We're going to let Mr. Blanco here do a little more heavy lifting than we have. He's been with us all semester long. And am I correct in thinking this is his last episode
this
with
is-
us?
His last show as official episode as the intern. We may have you back next week if you're still in town.
That'd be nice, yeah.
So, or not next week, but next show.
Yeah, next show. Yeah.
So,
awesome.
Yeah, but this is like the last official one where like you have to read the credits and stuff, and we make you do stuff.
Of course, yeah.
The next time you're just a guest is both the intern.
Feet up on the table here. You know, you can do whatever you want next time. But this time, you're working.
Yeah.
All right.
So coming up a little later in the show, we'll talk a little bit about the recent NFL draft and take a look at pro sports drafts in general, some of the differences among them, and maybe a little bit about how they've changed over time. We'll have that conversation coming up in just a bit. A little controversy this time around. John Steinbacher will tell us about a recent, did they call this a blue ribbon panel of folks who made recommendations
for
college basketball?
I mean, I don't think they did, but why not?
Why not? Condoleezza Rice, former Secretary of State, was part of this panel that had some recommendations for college basketball. That has some people grumbling a bit. We'll talk about that coming up. Our usual status update as well. But let's kind of get caught up on some recent sports news and notes. And Roger, one of our NBA experts here who follows the sport, I'd say more closely than the rest of us do. We're into the second round now, Roger. Any big surprises in the first round?
The Pelicans sweeping the Trailblazers four straight. That was surprising to me. I know they're playing very well, but now they're facing the Warriors, which is very unfortunate since they're always expected to go all the way. And Steph Curry made his debut yesterday. He had 28 points off the bench, 23
Whoa.
Minutes. Yeah.
I feel bad for Alan, who was our guest last time, who was a big Trailblazers fan. And he kind of knew, I think, that they were not going to go through. I don't know if he was expecting the trouncing that they got, but
yeah, I think when we talked to Alan, they'd already lost the first two games of the series
right.
at home, and so I think he saw the writing was on the wall.
But on the other hand, Travis, big Pelicans fan, so
Travis Tate, an occasional bandwagon guest, who actually writes for a Pelicans blog, I believe.
Oh, that's right.
Through SB Nation.
He must be elated.
Yeah, at least until they had to face Golden State.
Right.
That's fair, yeah. And then also the Cavs won yesterday in game one against the Raptors. LeBron had a triple-double. That's something that's not unusual. They won an OT, and he played 47 minutes.
Mm.
That is...
It's a lot of time.
Yeah. Coming into the game, didn't he say he was tired, too?
Yeah, after game seven, he's like, I just want to go home. I'm drained. So,
jeez.
The Cavs are going to really have to rely on him if they want to go anywhere. So, I personally don't see them winning out the East. I feel like that's just too much pressure on him and just wear and tear on him. But who knows?
I have a question about LeBron James. How old is he?
He is...
He's 33.
I would say, mid-30s. Yeah.
Okay, and so... Roger and everybody else, feel free to jump in. How long is his level of play sustainable, like physically and also mentally, like you're talking about? I have not heard him say, I'm drained, I just want to go home. Do you know what I'm saying? So I'm curious what you guys think, like how he's been, the first time I remember hearing about him, he was probably 13 or 14 years old, right? So he's been sort of in the consciousness for so long and he's been playing for so long. How much longer is he going to be able to go like this?
Well, I think this year is like one of his best like years statistically. He's just carrying the load. Like he's been doing that ever since he's been on the Cavs. Miami, I know he had like a little big three there, so it wasn't really all on him. And that was like during Dwayne Wade's prime. But I think you can kind of see that he's wearing down. Even he said like I'm tired. I can't I just want to go home. He doesn't really have that supporting cast that he's really used to having. Kevin Love, he shows up here and there. You have a lot of unproven players like Rodney Hood, Larry Nance, and Jordan Clarkson. So it's a very young team. Hopefully they learn from him, and we'll see where they go.
What about injuries for him? Has he had any sort of big-time injuries that have kept him out of the game for long periods of time?
No, not really.
That's unusual, too, I think. Yeah.
He has a lot of mileage because he obviously came right out of high school. And started playing right away. So I mean, the NBA season is much longer than the college basketball season. So he's, I mean, he's a old 34 in terms of NBA mm-hmm. career. But he did come of age in a time where, you know, things had changed and there's a lot more science behind, you know, lifting weights and keeping your body in shape. And
yeah.
I'm sure that right from the get-go, he's probably been on a good, you know, eating the right things kind of thing, as opposed to, you know, in the 80s or whatever, you go out to eat and get super drunk after every game.
They're practically smoking on the benches yeah, right. back then, yeah. man.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know. I think LeBron could probably go for another, what, 3-4 years?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
That would be my best guess, but the question is how much longer does he want to go on? You know, I think if he were able to win one more title, I almost think like he might just say, all right, good enough, but I don't know.
I think he gets compared to Michael Jordan all the time.
Yeah.
I think, what does he have, 3-4 titles?
He won one with Miami and one in Cleveland. I think it's just two.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, then he's not going to get to six. I was going to say that.
No.
That would be like the only reason I could see him sticking around.
Or does he, you know, does he stick around long enough to, you know, get the all-time scoring crown away from Jordan? Does he stick around long enough to do that maybe? I don't know.
Well, it's Kareem.
Oh, does Kareem still have the all-time scoring?
Mm-hmm.
I thought
Jordan didn't play long. Karl Malone has more than him, too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Shows what I know.
Today you learned.
Jordan
Brian.
Has the, and I don't think anyone will ever touch, well, shut up, John. Jordan has the highest career average, scoring career average, and you know, LeBron is a much better all-around player, so he's never really scored, you know, over 30 a game consistently like Jordan did.
Gotcha. All right. Well, thanks. I learn something new every time we record this podcast. So that's a little look at what's going on in the NBA playoffs here right now. The big event here locally last weekend was the Christie Clinic Illinois Marathon, all the events around that. I think in this room, I'm the only one who ran any of the events. Is that right?
Yeah.
You can't catch me out there. Running, to me, is not fun.
Get out there with like 10,000 of your closest friends.
Yeah, that'd be...
But I had a good time. I ran the marathon relay for the first time. So I got together with three friends and split it up into four parts. And I ran the third part of the relay, which took me from kind of downtown Champaign out west, out clear out on Duncan Road is where I handed off to the fourth person. And it was fun. I had another friend who was running the full marathon who kind of ran with our team the whole way, so
cool.
that was cool to have somebody to run
That's
with,
cool.
and it was a good time. And you know, the community was out there supporting it as always, which makes it better. And we finally had some pleasant weather for the first time in like 4 or 5 years.
Ages, yeah. Excuse me. It was beautiful. And as a spectator, I was really glad I wore my hat. But I know as a runner, it had to have been just perfect weather.
Yeah, I mean, it was a little breezy, but you're in Illinois. You expect
sure.
that.
Sure. Well, last year, didn't they have the finish, like the last part? Because my son ran the marathon last year in the half this time, and the wind was at their back coming into the stadium this time instead of having to run into the wind at the end, like a stiff wind at the end of the race last year. So, I thought I was at the starting line, and everybody seemed to be in a really good mood, and you get to see everybody in their costumes, and Abe Lincoln guy was running at least one of the races.
He ran the half marathon, yeah.
Did he run the half? And it's just it's always fun to send off the runners, and then I'd walk slowly over to the stadium to be in there to see some of the people finishing the races. And so I was in there for a couple hours. So I was in there when there was nobody in there, and they're just playing really loud AC/DC, and the British guy is like talking about, you know, Tom Petty or whatever. And then as finishers started coming in, it was pretty exciting. Got to see my son finish. He crushed his desired time, which was great.
Awesome.
I think it seemed to be a fast day for everybody. And I'm curious about that. Why is one day faster or better than another day? Does wind really have that much to do with it?
Oh, yeah.
Or temperature?
Wind and temperature, yeah, sure.
Yeah, so it seemed like there were a lot of PRs, that PR bell that they have you ring when you finish, when you look at your unofficial time. That was being rung a lot. But then we had the end. For the elite finishers, the first people finishing the marathon, it was very exciting to be in there. My son and my brother were on the field because they had both run. So they were watching on a monitor because they always have the cops with the sirens going off to sort of herald. And all of a sudden you see these guys running in. Just the kick at the end, just as fast as they can. I was hoping nobody was in their way because they were just going full out. And it was a photo finish.
photo finish. They finished with the exact same time to the hundredth of a second. And even the photo finish, they couldn't determine who crossed
first. Do you think that they couldn't determine, or do you think that they just decided it was so close?
Based on what I saw, I couldn't tell from what I saw.
I just feel like if it was the Boston Marathon or something like that, like
they would have found the winner.
Yeah.
Well, probably. But I think they also would have had better photos.
Right. I mean, it's not the Boston Marathon, and that's any marathon that ends in a virtual tie is unreal.
Yeah, no, you just don't see that.
It was, as they were coming in, I was like, oh my God, it's going to be that close. And of course, I'm looking up at the Jumbotron because you always expect to see a replay after something like that, except they're not going to show a replay because they want to keep showing people crossing the finish line. It's like, those guys finished. That's great. We're going to keep going. So I think I never actually saw a replay or a photo or the infamous photo that we were talking about.
Ah, yes.
So I thought that was kind of nutty to have at our marathon.
One thing that this made me realize, I didn't realize, is everyone just kind of finishes at the same place, which did cause, you know, when you see them running in, there's a bunch of other people running, but those people are finishing the 10K and the half marathon. Mm-hmm. And if someone would have gotten in the way, that you'd have a bit of a controversy there.
Yeah, and I think where that would come in is with the full marathon and the half marathon. I think they do finish at the same exact place because they're on the same clock. They start at the same time. The 10K people are kind of shuttled off to the right because they have a different clock timing them because they started so much later. And so the 10K people are kind of funneled to the right, and the half marathon and full marathon people come in on the left.
And at that point, at the 2 hour and 20-something mark, you're talking for the half marathon, people who probably ran it the whole way but are nowhere close to elite. So, I mean, you wouldn't – I mean, they're just kind of jogging and not really paying attention as, you know, you wouldn't expect them to. So it's just interesting.
Yeah. So one heck of a finish.
I did want to point out that I did make my children run. I did not run.
I was going to ask you about that.
You didn't run with them for the Busey kids run?
No. They can get in on it themselves. Actually, well, you can run with your kids, but honestly, it's for the younger kids. The kids that are my kids' age and older, like, if I would have been running with them, I would have been, like, pushing, like, other kids out of the way. That would have been
kind of like the finish of
the marathon. It's interesting. You know, we go there, we sit, they run, they get done, they eat cookies and mac and cheese, and, you know, how'd it go? Oh, great. They're just so casual about it. Like, my daughter, in her little heat, you know, came in third, and she just looked like, you know, you'd ask her, oh, great job, yeah, whatever, you know.
How far do they run?
Just 1K, and it's like, it's all in the stadium, so it's kind of chaos because I go, like, up and down the field and around, and they're all, like, running after a bike, so they all stay on track, and it is chaos. It's fun, and I think it's nice that they do it. I think next year I might have my daughter, we'll see if she's up and willing to maybe try and run the 5K. I would do that with her. I think she could do it. I mean, I don't think we're gonna break 16 minutes together or anything, but...
Awesome. Yeah, it's always a fun event. And thanks to all the organizers, volunteers, everybody who helps put on the Illinois Marathon every year. Let's do one more thing before we go into our big segment of the day here. Roger, we have not really given you much of an opportunity to talk about your favorite baseball team this semester. We've mentioned them here and there. The Chicago White Sox.
Yes.
And on the field, they're not looking so good here to start the year. As a Sox fan, how you feeling? Where are they at? Where are they going?
I had high expectations for this season. I know, like, a lot of MLB writers saying, we have a chance to contend maybe for, like, a little wild card spot. And I did not expect this bad of a start. We have no pitching. That's what it is, really. We have a bunch of young starters, and if James Shields is our number one guy, I think that's a bit of a problem. But hopefully, you know, towards the later end of the season, we get the young guys coming up, like Kopech or Eloy Jimenez coming in. Just get some at-bats, get some innings pitched in the major leagues, and hopefully we can, you know, just everyone flocks in. I know I've been following the farm system a lot, and I feel like our farm system is actually doing better than our MLB team. So that's something to I don't know, give me some hope in the future. So hopefully in the next 2-3 years, we're actually somewhere and being able to compete for a World Series title. And yeah.
So you've hopefully. Sort of revised your expectations for this year.
Yes, I have. Yeah, yes, I have.
To what? You're just hoping for 500? Like, what are you hoping for?
500 would be nice. If not, just anywhere in top 5 draft picks, really. I know we have the 4th pick in this coming draft in June. So I'm excited for that. Just keep bringing in the young talent, and we'll see where we can go.
Sounds like you're at where us Cubs fans were at about 5 years ago.
Yeah, and I have to say that's a wonderful transition you just did there, Roger. Perfect, because what we're going to talk about next is some draft stuff.
All right, so time to talk some draft. The NFL draft just last week. They've turned that into a big spectacle over the years. Let's talk about the NFL draft that just happened. Yes, Lisa Brault.
So before we get started, I would like for somebody who is not me to explain just very basically 101, very quickly, explain the concept of a draft and what it is, just in case there's somebody out there who's kind of like, what are they talking about and why is this a big deal?
Well, every year the major pro sports all have a player draft of some sort where they essentially choose players that are amateurs, and they go in. Usually the order is somewhat related to win-loss record the previous year.
I mean, it is totally. There's no league where it's not. It's just sometimes it's not in exact reverse order.
Right, right. The NBA has a draft lottery, for example, that determines the top order of the top, 13, 14 yeah. picks. Mm-hmm. The other sports, I think, are all just based on one lost record, the right. worst teams get to pick
the
first.
The NHL has a bit of a draft, and we can talk about that.
And then there's expansion draft, too, which can happen to help populate new teams who have no record, so they don't. So they sort of get what they get, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of how that works. Okay.
Yeah, and the different sports have different rules, a different number of rounds, for example. The NBA has just 2. Major League Baseball, I think you get up to around 40 rounds.
Oh man, I'm in for all those rounds.
Yeah.
All 40,
baby.
I mean, it is slightly dependent on the size of the sport and also sort of the infrastructure within the sport. As we've talked about a little bit, the NFL is huge teams, but they don't have like a minor league system. Where
right.
in Major League Baseball, big teams, big minor league system. So when you draft, you're not only drafting, you actually. So in the NFL, you're drafting for those people are going to be on your team next year. In the NBA, those people are going to be on your team next year. Mm-hmm. In the NHL and in Major League Baseball, in particular, a lot of even your best players probably 3 or 4 years down the road going to be.
Yeah, I mean, the quickest guys, you will occasionally see like a college pitcher get drafted and maybe pitch in September that year as a late season call up, but that's even very rare
right.
to see.
Mm-hmm. And I guess we should point out one of the huge differences between, say, the NBA draft and the NFL draft and hockey and Major League Baseball is that in hockey and Major League Baseball, a lot of times you're drafting either high school players or and baseball in particular, high school players. But in hockey, people who maybe didn't play college, you wouldn't play on club teams or things like that. Whereas in the NBA, which we get to a little later, it's mostly college players and sometimes European players. And then in the NFL, it's almost exclusively college football players. Although
we do have a change, yeah.
I saw that one of the last rounds of NFL draft. Did the rugby player.
Yeah, yeah, the Eagles picked this huge guy from Australia, right?
Yeah, Jordan, I'm going to botch his last name, Malata. He's 6'8", and weighs 346 pounds.
Whoa.
That's a large human being.
So he does have the NFL body, so.
Yeah, what did he play, like tight end or?
The highlights they were showing of him in rugby, I can't imagine that they will not have him carry the ball in some form.
But it can't be
goal line situations
running back.
Or something.
Yeah. I saw some highlights. Yeah, we should.
We'll share that for sure. Yeah, definitely. But back to the NFL draft here just quickly, and some of the highlights from that. The Cleveland Browns picking number 1 overall yet again. Yep. They're almost always in the top few picks. And they're trying to pick a franchise quarterback again. picked Baker Mayfield from Oklahoma. Roger, what are people thinking about that pick?
I know recently, I think yesterday, there was a report that came out that the Patriots wanted to trade up to probably pick Baker Mayfield. So I guess that kind of changes people's decisions. Like, oh, it's the Patriots. They want him. He must be good. So initially, I didn't think he was the best quarterback in the draft. I know people can say, yeah, he's a winner. He's won throughout college, but I guess that just you can say like Johnny Manziel was a winner in college, and he didn't really pan out, and he did get drafted by the Browns. So I see like they're very similar players. So we'll see what happens, and I'm rooting for him. So we'll see.
All right, and local flavor, the Bears. They went with Roquan Smith, a linebacker out of Georgia. I think most people thought that was a pretty good pick for the Bears.
Yeah, he fits very well in the scheme that Vic Fangio has. They're comparing him to another Patrick Willis, because Vic Fangio was actually coached Patrick Willis during his 49ers days. So this guy literally led that Georgia defense to the national championship, and that almost beat Alabama. That Georgia defense was just relentless, and they beat that Baker Mayfield. So yeah. I remember that game in the Rose Bowl. So I love this pick. Our defense is going to be very good. I know Roquan Smith was a teammate of Leonard Floyd a few years ago, so they have connection there. So I'm very excited. Hopefully we bring back the Monsters of the Midway and see if we can actually win some games this year, which I'm pretty positive that we will.
All right.
The Bears got a, you know, after every draft out in the sports writers sphere and websites and stuff, every other article is about grading every team.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it seems like the Bears.
Yeah, we're like one of the, I guess like there was an article that says winners and losers, and we're like one of the five winners of that draft. Everyone seemed to like our picks, so that's exciting.
Tell us about what Josh Rosen said. I like his attitude.
So he got drafted, I believe, 10th overall, and he was supposed to probably go like top three picks, and ended up the Cardinals ended up I think trading up for him, and he said they interviewed him right after saying the other nine teams made a mistake. I should have, you know, he's basically saying that I'm the best quarterback out there. And he, like, I saw the interview and he looked pretty mad. He said, yeah, I'm pretty pissed off that I didn't, you know, go where I wanted to or like higher than I expected. So that gives him a little chip on the shoulder. He has to prove something now. He has to back up his statement. So we'll see where that goes.
Yeah, I think, I like the attitude, but. You know, someone's got to get picked first.
No, yeah.
Yeah.
The interesting thing about the NFL draft is how big of a hoopla it's become, right? Like, over time, because these players come in, especially with college football as it is now, or if we're expanding to the NBA draft, college basketball players, or we were talking about LeBron James, and, you know, everyone knew he was going to be the number one pick in the NBA draft from the time he was like 13 or 14. They've become such huge events. Like the NFL draft now is, you know, for a while it was in Chicago and they had this big thing. Was it in LA this year or New Orleans? No,
it was in Arlington, Texas.
Dallas
Cowboys Stadium.
So, yeah, it was at Cowboys Stadium and it's like a three-night affair. The first night you have the first round and the second night you have, you know, two more rounds and on Saturday you have a bunch of more rounds. I mean, isn't it strange that this is a huge thing? I mean, I guess it's not strange, but it seems like we're filling a lot of time. I used to watch the NFL draft, but I just can't do it anymore because they just say the same stuff. And Lisa, I'm sure you would probably, the way they talk about players, you know, they
big hunks of meat,
yeah, exactly.
Commodities.
They, yeah, exactly. And that's what's
bellies
kinda,
and beans and right. NFL players.
That's what's kind of weird about drafts in general is that, you know, you start identifying people not as players or whatever, but like it's, you know, it's basically like a stock exchange or something.
Right.
Yeah, it's very strange.
So actually, while you were talking, I was looking up the definition of the word draft because it's also a military word. I mean, that's really where this is kind of coming from. And actually, they get to the sports definition at 9C in the definition. So there are nine nine meanings plus two sub-meanings before you even get to the sports definition, which is a system whereby exclusive rights to selected new players are apportioned among professional teams. Example, he was chosen in the first round of the draft. So it strikes me that we use a lot of military terms in our day-to-day lives and in sports, and I think we've even discussed it. I don't know, it's been like 54 episodes, so I have no idea, but I'm pretty sure we have discussed some of the terminology in the past, so that strikes me. But also, John, you know, you're talking about the spectacle, and we've talked a little bit about the ball families, like reality show and things like that. And I'm sort of surprised that there hasn't been programming, or maybe there has been programming created around this draft. You have the draft, which has gone from like a one night event or whatever it used to be to this thing where I'm imagining like a street festival and vendors of cotton candy and like, and there's, you know, people who aren't even involved in the draft are attending the draft or being around the draft. And it seems to me that somebody at some point is going to create some kind of reality programming around it. Or maybe we'll have like an American sports idol kind of thing where we get to vote on play. I don't know. I'm just riffing here. But it just seems to me like if you're making – it's something that is the business of sports that's now being brought out into like mainstream audiences as content, which I think is really interesting.
They do they do a little bit of like follow a player draft experience, and I think those have turned into kind of shows or stuff like that, but I can't think of like anything that's sort of blown up into the popular consciousness.
It's still growing, it sounds like. I mean, and this is the NFL draft we're talking about here. I'm not sure that in other sports you have quite the same level of spectacle.
No, I mean, the NBA is kind of, it's not quite there, but it's the closest. Mm-hmm. The NBA draft, that was just one night, it's two rounds, and...
Well, and the NBA draft has turned into like a fashion show, and that's sort of like who wears the best suit, right?
Yeah.
I know with the NFL draft, like they do like who did the commissioner hug the longest. With the NBA draft, it's...
Ooh, it sounds like a Twitter fight, you know?
And what's interesting is, so the drafts are all wrapped up now into one thing, like in baseball and in, you know, basketball. We saw the 76ers is drafts are all wrapped up in tanking, right? You tank for a while, then you get high draft picks, then you reload, and then eventually become good again. And one of the ways that the NBA and NHL have tried to battle this, quite unsuccessfully, I think we would say, is to have their draft based on lottery. So if you don't make the playoffs, you have like a lottery system where the worst team gets the most balls and thing or whatever, and then they pull them out, and occasionally like someone who finished eighth worst actually gets the first pick. And that, the NBA draft, the lottery of the NBA draft became a big deal. And then Roger and I were just talking, and we both happened to watch the NFL or no, the NHL, the hockey version of this, and they don't really have it down very well.
It was
not exciting TV. They like turn over a piece of paper.
Like a card.
They got some work to do up there in Toronto at league offices to make this a little more exciting. And I was just reading online. Apparently, the Vancouver Canucks sent their mascot, and they wouldn't even let him.
Come on, NHL, lighten up.
Get it together. It's like, it's, you know, the I think the...
Are they doing it the way, sorry, John, are they doing it the way they've always done it?
I don't know. I've never seen it before.
Okay.
I would assume if in the past it probably didn't happen. You televise everything that we're talking about. And the guy, the Buffalo Sabres won, and like when they announced it, he like barely cracked a smile. You know, he's like,
it's hockey, man. He's tough.
Yeah, he's hockey. And he's tough, like, how excited are you? Like, I am so excited.
I can't wait to draft first. Yes. So,
interesting.
And then there's, you know, different rules for different drafts. For instance, like we mentioned, kind of the player pool is different. Some sports have international players in the draft pool, like the NBA does, for instance. Major League Baseball, though, does not.
So complicated.
Yeah, so it's just, you know, amateur players in the United States from high school and college get drafted by Major League Baseball. The international system is really complicated now. It used to just be kind of a free-for-all. Teams could sign whoever they wanted for how much ever they wanted. But now there are salary caps on that. You have like a certain amount of money you can spend on international players every year. It's gotten really complicated.
Right, and I the only way I follow this is through the Cubs, because, I mean, I'm sure there's lots of people who are all in on everything, but I just don't have the bandwidth for it. But
no.
I did see the Cubs are finally out of the penalty box, or will be soon. And in fact, through their international signings, they signed two of the top prospects in all of Major League Baseball. Neither of them are with their team. One of them is with the White Sox, Eloy Jimenez. But they've now supposedly going to sign three more people, and two of them are really good prospects. But they're like 16, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So you know, you make this big deal about, oh, it's, you got to be pure, you got to graduate from high school, and then we'll give you $8 million or whatever. But you have to be drafted, and you have to be in this order. But then, you know, you get to the international markets, and you're signing kids to lots of money.
Yeah, it's kind of a mess.
So my nephew has now transitioned to playing club baseball. He's 8. Mm-hmm. And so it's travel, you know. So my brother and his wife are kind of like, oh, my God, where are even some of these towns in Illinois that we have to go to? But the way these kids act, the way they run, the way they swing the bat, I just wonder, like, when do kids start being scouted? I'm sure they're being scouted early on in club ball, right? They're not being scouted in park district T-ball, but some of these kids like my nephew, who've grown up watching the game, you know, and it reminds me a little bit too. My brother, when he was 8 years old, could throw a curveball and was in Little League, but they certainly weren't scouting kids then. But it sounds to me, as you guys are talking about the draft age getting younger and younger, I just wonder if kids are being scouted that early. Discuss.
I wouldn't say 8 or 9. Probably around 11 or 12, they probably get on people's radars. I mean, I don't really know.
Well, yeah, see, they can't be drafted until they graduate from high school. That's
okay.
The thing.
Yeah.
So we were talking about international people, and that's kind of a all no-holds-barred market. But yeah,
you've got, like, academies, sure. Like in the Dominican Republic, with kids coming in who are 8, 9, 10
years
old.
Well, soccer is the same way.
Yeah.
They have development leagues like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I would say, if you ask certain people, you're never too young, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you know, if they're talking about LeBron James as a basketball prospect when he was 13 or 14, he couldn't have been drafted until after he left high school either. And also you have the whole thing of, like, growing to your full height and size and all that other stuff. And so it stands to reason to me that they can probably identify talent pretty super early now, or maybe are just trying to comb those club teams. I know they do that for soccer even here. You know, they're like, the high school coaches are at some of these other, you know, park district games looking for players and recruiting. It's just kind of, it's
so
interesting to me.
Your nephew is 8?
He's 8, and he's on a travel
team. I'm only
team.
Saying that because my son just started playing, and he's having so much fun and enjoying it. And I know it's going to turn, right? Like, I'm way off topic now, but I just know it's going to turn to start being serious and competitive, and I don't
sure.
know how he's going to respond to that, and it makes me sad.
It's interesting because my nephew loves it. And he plays like Y basketball too, but baseball is kind of his thing. It's kind of their family sport, I think. And so they're really into it. But the parents, I don't know, it's pretty great. They're encouraging, but also really competitive as well. The parents are. Yeah, it's fascinating. And that's, we've talked off and on about youth sports in the past. But as we sit here and start talking about drafts, it stands to reason to me that at some point, at least in baseball, because they do this in other sports, they're going to start mining.
Well, a lot of the players from the Little League World Series end up playing in, like, Major League Baseball,
mm-hmm.
I'm sure that people, when those things are going to, they have their eyes on them.
I'm sure they do. All right, that's a little look at the draft. One other article we'll share with you in our web post also has to do with the draft being one of the reasons why one writer for The Atlantic thinks that American professional sports are much more socialistic than their European counterparts. We'll share that.
Yeah, I mean, maybe someday we can actually get into some more of the economics behind drafts and sports. I think that's really fascinating, but none of us have the sort of level of expertise required to really.
We need a teacher.
We do. But we hope you've enjoyed the conversation around professional sports drafts anyway. So that's a look at pro sports drafts. Now it's time to move on to some controversy.
Well, it's draft related. We've talked on and off about sort of in particular one and dones, I think, with college basketball being such a big part of the University of Illinois and the sort of, you know, local history and just all the big names and all the controversies going on. So the NCAA put together a panel to propose reforms as far as college basketball went. And former Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice headed it up. They had some proposed changes to alter the texture of the sport, but according to the New York Times, they stopped well short of challenging the longtime requirement that college athletes remain amateurs, uncompensated beyond a scholarship and stipend for their talents. The levels of corruption and deception are now at the point that they threaten the very survival of the college game as we know it, says Ms. Rice.
So what are you going to do about it, Condi?
Yeah, yeah. So I think what we're going to see is pretty much the one-and-done thing that we've talked about is probably going away. They're talking about making things more transparent and accountable, and she says that this is they want to put the college back in college basketball. I think for a lot of people, their recommendations, the one-and-done thing, I think people think is a good step. I don't think – I mean, I'm sure the Tom Izzo's and Mike Krzyzewski's of the world may not be happy with it, or maybe they will be, so they can go back
to it. I think Krzyzewski's embraced it now.
He has embraced it. But, okay, so Ramoji Huma, the president of the College Athletes Players Association and advocate for more rights for athletes, said the commission dodged the main issues. The root cause of the FBI investigation, the NCAA rules limiting actual prohibiting compensations for players, and none of the recommendations speak to them, none of them. So I think the controversy here that will remain is you're not really, you know, these athletes are making, or colleges and universities and coaches are making millions and millions and millions of dollars. And, you know, TV, Big Ten, ESPN, everyone's making millions and millions of dollars off of college amateur players, and they're not getting compensated. Which brings us to an interesting thing we were going to talk about, which is a recruit who had chose Syracuse, Darius Bazley, has decided to forego going to college basketball. And what has happened in the past when star high school prospects, they usually go to, some of them have gone to Europe. Mm-hmm. He is the first one. He has chosen to go to the G League. Instead, the G League, as we've talked about, is like the minor league basketball system for the NBA, the G League for Gatorade.
Yes.
And he's totally honest. He says the current system has set up for basketball players to think of the college as a one-year stop before declaring for the NBA draft. I knew I wasn't going to attend school with the intent of pursuing a degree, at least not right now. So my mindset of that a college degree would not be for me in my future or maybe later in the future, but right now everything is basketball. And this is really interesting. He said, of all the critiques I've gotten, I think the funniest one is people who point out I'm only going to make $26,000 next year because I'm like, I'm going to make $26,000 next year. And, you know, you play college basketball, you make no money, right? So he's taking he's kind of a big risk because one of the things about college basketball or even Europe is you're in the spotlight. As we know, or as we've talked about in the G League, there's not a whole lot of, I mean, people will probably follow him a little bit more than they typically do, but you kind of go off into, you know.
It's pretty anonymous.
Yeah, and you're playing in not very glamorous cities. No offense to the G League cities.
Boise, for instance.
Right, but so this is interesting. While the commission with Condoleezza Rice has suggested some changes, and I think the one-and-done rule is over. I mean, I think Roger pointed out even the NBA commissioner basically said it's going to go away. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. But it's still – you still have the root cause of a lot of the corruption. You're still going to have players who maybe – only a handful of guys are really ever going to come out of high school and go straight to the NBA. So you're still going to have a lot of high-caliber, big-name prospects going to college basketball, making a lot of money for their institutions and according to several people, not being properly compensated.
Mm-hmm. So there you have it. We'll link to the articles about that as well, not only about erstwhile Syracuse recruit. That's the word I was looking for.
Right.
Also about the one-and-done system and Condi Rice's recommendations and all that good stuff. So that'll be coming your way very shortly. I think we're just about done here. It is time for our status updates. Who wants to lead things off this week? Lisa Brault.
I'll go first, just because I have two. I do this all the time, and I'm sorry, but they're short. The first one is not news-related, but it is something funny that my husband pointed out to me last night on Reddit, and it's a video courtesy of, I believe, Fox News showing a kid who has hit a home run, or who is rounding the bases. Another kid has hit a home run. He is maybe 6 years old, playing Little League, and he goes in slow motion, like he pretends he's running in slow motion. And you can hear all the parents going, "Come on, Logan," or whatever his name is. And he's like, literally, he's 5 years old, and he's like totally milking it, like just pretending. If you could see me now, you'd see me like pretending to run in slow motion.
Chariots of Fire style.
It takes him forever. There's a kid waiting on third base to, like, maybe the kid who hit the home run, to round the base. The coach tries to get out and encourage him, and he, like, waves him off, like, "Get out of here. Let me have my moment." And then when he gets to home plate, he falls on top of it. And so we'll post a link to the video. It's pretty great. That was one thing. The other one is actually something that Roger brought up in our Slack channel, so I hope it's not yours, about Shad Khan wanting to buy Wembley Stadium. And it's sort of tangentially related to last episode where we talked about relocation of teams. Mm-hmm. So one of the ideas behind him possibly buying a share of Wembley would be to move Jacksonville overseas, the Jacksonville Jaguars, like a move. That's my understanding, right? Wasn't that what that's mm-hmm. that article said?
That
which
would
I thought
be
was
interesting. They're already playing two or three games a year in London.
Yes. So we'll definitely post a link to that, too, because it's kind of, you know, for people who are listening who don't know, Shad Khan has a history here at the University of Illinois and in Urbana-Champaign. So it's kind of interesting to follow along with what he's doing.
Absolutely. All right. Roger Blanco, what do you have?
Yeah. So after game 7 of the Cavs and Pacers series, Victor Oladipo, there's a report that his trainer posted a picture of Oladipo, sent him a text saying, "When do we start, like, practicing, training, and stuff like that?" He's like, "The game just ended." So Dirk Nowitzki took a little twist on this. So he texted his trainer saying, "When do we start?" And his trainer responded, "I told you 4 years ago that you were done 4 years ago. Your game has been in decline since Havlicek stole the ball from you. Your full court sprints are timed with the calendar. That being said, if you wire me 561 Bitcoin, so $5 million, we can start tomorrow." So I found that pretty funny.
Nice.
As we know, Dirk Nowitzki's towards the tail end of his career. So
at least he's honest.
Yeah, he is honest. Yeah. He even tweeted, "I got inspired by Victor Oladipo. I also texted my trainer. Here's response." So that was his response. So that was pretty funny.
Very good. John Steinbacher.
I haven't talked about baseball in a while, so I feel like I can do this. All around wonderful human and, Cleveland pitcher Trevor Bauer, who has had some rough outings in the playoffs against the Cubs in the World Series, I think.
He
got lit up pretty good. And then last year, I think the Yankees lit him up pretty good. I'm just mentioning that as whatever. There was an article, something about how as we talked about in previously, advanced statistics, one of the things that pitchers talk about is spin rate. And there was an article or someone asked someone about how the Astros players all have these huge pitchers have these great spin rates now, and how it's really been great for their team, and that's one of the reasons their staff is so successful. So he tweeted out, you know, like the emoji with the finger on the chin and something about, if there was only a really quick way to increase spin rate, like what if you could trade for a player knowing that you could bump his spin rate a couple hundred RPM overnight? Imagine the steals you could get on the trade market if only it existed. Basically hinting at that the entire Astros team pitching staff is cheating. Now, if you follow baseball at all, you know all the pitchers kind of have their own way of doctoring the ball a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think that you just don't want to be too obvious about it. But the accusation here is kind of insane. And, of course, the whole Astros pitching staff just sort of gave it back to him and all this stuff. But it's just, I think it's really interesting to see a major league pitcher accusing other pitchers of cheating, especially because I don't know.
And Bauer's kind of a strange guy anyway. He's got this really strange pregame routine that involves all this weird stretching and long toss and all this
and
weird stuff.
And he famously cut his pitching hand fingers off or really messed them up with a drone, trying to fix a drone.
That's right.
Yeah. He's just an all-around really weird guy. And, after a bad start last last year in the playoffs, he started blocking everyone on Twitter. Someone take his social media presence away from him, I guess is what I'm saying.
Nah, it wouldn't be as much fun for us.
That's true. Just let it ride.
All right, I'll go last here, and we talked a little bit about New Orleans winning in the first round, getting to play Golden State. One of their players this year is longtime NBA point guard Rajon Rondo, who's never been known as like a real nice guy, a real good character guy. That's just not his reputation. He's been kind of he's been known to cause some problems wherever he's gone. Last night, during the game against Golden State, there's a video clip after a free throw. Draymond Green shooting two free throws. After the first free throw, Rondo, who's standing on the lane, comes in, grabs the basketball, just takes it and wipes it all over his face and chest to get his sweat on it, I guess to try and make Green miss the second free throw. So,
that's awesome.
Yeah, so somebody on Twitter, Pettywise, at Worldwide Wob, tweeted out, Rajon Rondo wiping his sweat all over the ball before Draymond attempted his second free throw. Got to be the pettiest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It's pretty petty and sweaty.
Petty and sweaty. That describes Rajon Rondo, yeah. I think, very well. Yeah. All right. So that'll wrap things up on this edition of The Bandwagon. One more time, Roger Blanco, let's go with some credits.
Yes. We want to thank you here for joining us on The Bandwagon. Thank you very much. Bandwagon is a production of Illinois Public Media. This episode was produced by Brian Moline, Lisa Burlton, John Steinbaker, and myself, Roger Blanco. Many thanks go to Scott Cameron, Jim Kelly, Mike Bowman, and musical genius Automatic Empire, who wrote and performed our theme and other music heard within. Find us on the web at will.illinois.edu/bandwagon, where you can stream us again and again and click all the links and stuff. Better yet, subscribe to Bandwagon and rate it in iTunes. If you don't have iTunes, no problem. You can find us in Stitcher and NPR One. And we're always working on being available in other places. Follow us on Twitter at BNDWGNPDCST, all consonants, no vowels, to get our tweets. Please add us. We love it when you do. We'll be back in a couple weeks for another episode about the often strange and always compelling intersection between sports and everything under the sun. Until then, thank you for playing.
Thanks, Roger, for everything. Yay.
Thank you. Thank you.
It was a lot of fun.
Yes.
So good job. Thanks.